fiction feeds your fantasy. A little fiction dampens the reality. A little fiction. Hello and welcome to The Writing Cast. I'm your host, Ivy Reisner, and this is episode 92, Ethics. It has been a really interesting time recently for ebooks. Amazon announced that they're selling two Kindle books for every print book, which is a combination of paperback and hardcover combined, which is really exciting. And Barnes & Noble rolled out a much-needed upgrade to the Nook. It's supposed to come, I think, Friday, and it's going to finally allow collections where you can organize content, because the combination of really cheap books, free books, and no organization, my Nook looks like a mess. I can't find anything anymore. And, of course, they came out with the Nook Color, which I'm not sure what to think of it. It's a kind of a nice device, but it's backlit, and I don't know, it should be interesting. It's just a really exciting time for publishing technology. Now, a long, long, long time ago, I spoke on Knit Spirit. I'll link to it in the show notes. I spoke on Knit Spirit about Aristotle's value ethics. And this time I want to compare two popular models of ethics as they put stress between characters in a story. It's another good versus good trick. It's another fleshing out the characters, making their conflict real trick. The first school of thought is utilitarian ethics. And a prime fictional example of that is Spock, if you remember his "the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one." That's utilitarian ethics in a nutshell. And the idea is that you do whatever causes the maximum total good. Deontology says that each individual is responsible for his or her own actions, and the ends do not justify the means. So even if doing something resulted in a greater overall good, if that action itself were evil, it would be improper to do it. So let's look at some examples in philosophy first, and then we can take a look at how they would impact writing. Okay, another one example is an out-of-control car, and there's a group of six people who would not be able to get out of the way in time. And you have the power to, maybe you've got a rocket launcher on your shoulder, you've got some ability to destroy the car utterly, killing the one driver in it to save the six people. Utilitarian ethics says that you're saving six lives at the cost of one, so you destroy the car, you save the six people. Deontology says that killing someone, no matter what the reason, is always wrong, so you do not destroy the car, you do not engage in the act of killing the one, and the six will just suffer their fate. Now, here's where things get a little interesting to argue on the part of the deontologists. Pretend there is a car accident and six people need blood. You could whack somebody on the head and drain them out and give the blood to six people, thus killing one to save six lives. I'm not saying that utilitarians would argue that, yeah, you should just go bonk somebody on the head to drain their blood, but it is the counter-argument that deontologists often use. Those are kind of extreme, but they show the framework. In modern politics, do you tax the rich to feed the poor? Utilitarians say yes. Deontologists can argue that taking something from someone is wrong, and they would say no on those grounds. Here's a science fiction example. You've got two police officers, and they've come from the future. In that future, the antagonist of the story has maybe become this mass murderer. He's killed 2 million people. And now you're back in time. Your police officers are back in time. And this is before he's killed anyone. Maybe one police officer is a utilitarian, and he says, hey, we can save all these millions of lives if we kill this guy now before he's done anything wrong. And the deontologist might say, but he hasn't actually done anything wrong, and therefore murder is itself wrong. And now you've got some tension between the characters, even though both of them are on the side of good. This is your classic go back in time and kill Hitler example. In an office, you've got a character who's engaged in corporate fraud. Your protagonist knows it and can't prove it. An opportunity presents itself to frame this person for the one thing she didn't do. Utilitarianism says do it. Deontology says don't do it. But this character isn't a diehard member of either camp. So now both schools of thought will be playing themselves out, arguing their case inside of the one character she tries to decide on what to do. And you can find similar conflict in many conflicting ideas of philosophy. It's a really fertile ground to go hunting in to find ways to add conflict to your story. A great transparent example of deontological ethics played out on the page is Terry Goodkind's Stone of Tears. It's book two of his Sword of Truth series. These books are enormous. Fair warning, they are all coming out in ebook format soon, so if you don't want to read 6-point font where the letters go just about to the edge of the page and sometimes get cut off, and 900 pages or so each, you can wait just a little bit. The first one's already out. The second one should be out soon. The 12th book is coming out in February, and I don't know if it's coming out in ebook, but anyway. The second book, Stone of Tears, is deontological ethics played out beautifully on the page. In this one, he talks about the wizard's second rule. And the wizard's second rule is that sometimes the greatest harm can come from the best intentions. And you see characters violating that principle, violating deontological ethics, doing bad things for good reasons, sometimes for great reasons, throughout the book, and they always suffer the consequences of it. So you have one character betray the man she loves to a fate that he is terrified of because she wants to save his life, and that doesn't exactly work out well. You've got people doing all sorts of things for good reason, really trying to do the right thing, and every single time, it just, or almost every single time, it works out badly. The few times it doesn't, it's surprising. It's just to keep the story fresh, keep it from being totally predictable. But it's really good. He's really obvious about it. It plays pretty close to the surface, and it is meant to. And most of his books, by the way, are like that. Whatever the rule is, you see violations of it throughout the story, and it gets played. The theme gets played many different ways. So Wizard's First Rule, people will believe whatever they are afraid to believe or whatever they want to believe, and so forth and so on with the rest of the series. It's an interesting book series. I'll admit I really didn't like the Denna arc in book one. Book one is sort of interesting because the character's going along for a while. And it's classic fantasy fare for about 600 or so pages. And then, out of nowhere, the protagonist, Richard, breaks out of the trap and runs headlong into a dominatrix. Insert a couple hundred pages of random dominatrix stuff for no obvious reason whatsoever, and then jump back into the main story where he goes back to collecting magic items and saving the universe. It was just really, really odd. It is actually the one part of the book that doesn't explore the theme of how easy it is to deceive people, how people are likely to believe what they're afraid to believe, what they want to believe. It is a remarkably popular piece of fantasy. It's, I'd say, guilty pleasure, and it's just a lot of fun. So definitely a book series to check out, but a digression. Really, what it's about is looking for a philosophical underpinning to a story. And then play what if, play variations on the theme. Sometimes have it take different courses just to keep things interesting and have different characters sort of standing at different places because that's going to innately put them in conflict. Another great example from popular fiction is DC Comics. And you see this when they put Wonder Woman and Batman together. And sparks are going to fly at some point because Wonder Woman is pure utilitarian ethics. She will kill if she has to save a life, to save sometimes the world. Batman is pure deontology. This is why he's never killed Joker. For him, he will never commit a wrong act, no matter what the positive outcome would be. And his friends keep getting on him because they think he should just kill Joker already. He's never going to because he's pure deontologist. So you get the opposition playing out there. A really good example of how that all plays out is in the very beginning of, or the lead up to, Infinite Crisis. And the paperback of that is out, and And Graphic Audio has a fantastic audio presentation of that. You get the conflict of Wonder Woman has killed in order to save Superman, and it's ripped apart the team. For her, she's being a utilitarian. She's destroying someone evil to save someone good. She is destroying someone evil to save someone who routinely saves the world. So indirectly, she is destroying someone evil to save the world. She's a pure utilitarian. She has absolutely no problem with it. Her teammates, pure deontologist Batman and largely deontologist Superman, do have a problem with it. And it plays out between them. They're all heroes. They're all good guys. But they're against each other at that point in the story. And it makes it really, really interesting. The interplay of the characters, the interplay of just the ideas of what is good. And bringing that, bringing philosophy into the subtext of the story always gives a deeper resonance and meaning to a story. I'd suggest looking at the Blackwell series, Blackwell Philosophy and Popular Culture series. You've got philosophy and Harry Potter, philosophy and Twilight, philosophy and House, philosophy and just about anything. Philosophy and The Matrix was actually really, really good. Check any of those out because they're a really accessible, fun way to get into some of the schools of thought and then just let them play. And you can also, of course, seeing how the philosophers deal with it, see how other authors have caused that interplay to happen. They sort of deconstruct what's going on in the story and why the story is working as well as it is. So something to look into. And that should wrap us up for this time. Until next time, feed the muse and keep writing. Some of the music provided tonight from the Pod Show, PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.
Look up and reach down to a box of dreams and pick anyone you like. Choose the one that will make you the happiest. But you gotta picture it.